Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. I bet you get 30, 30, I bet you get 30, I bet you get 20, 20, 20, I bet you get 20, 20, I bet you get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month, sold.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos. But that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling, featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Support WrestleTalk!
Give us a subscribe.
Making their way to the ring at a combined weight of undeniably sexy, hailing from London, the Wrestle Ramble Podcast!
Hello and welcome to the Wrestle Ramble Podcast. I am Ollie Davis and I'm joined by Luke Owen.
Hello, Swaff Nation, and a hello to you, Oliver Davis. How the devil are you? And I know that you've got quite an exciting story to tell us about Writers Group.
I mean, is it exciting? It's just an update on me book.
On your book. Well, I'm very excited to hear it.
I mean, what, you want it now?
Well, I mean, what else do you want to do? Do you want to talk about what you got planned for the weekend? What have you got planned for the weekend?
I am going to a Pitch Perfect Acalong.
Oh, yes, mate. An Acalong at the Prince Charles?
Yes.
Oh, that's going to be blinding.
It's a triple date. You were invited, but you are doing a Steven Spielberg marathon instead.
I'm doing a Steven Spielberg select retrospective with some friends of mine.
But no, it's me, my lady partner, and a couple of other couples that I went to school with, the chaps, and they're bringing along their assorted lady partners.
Lovely
one
stuff.
Each.
Yep, obviously.
There's a cap on this. And yeah,
it's good
because last time we went, I can't remember which one we went to, but it was just three of us, and we were the only adult men there. And everyone else had been dragged along, but like, there were other adult men there, but they had been dragged along by their girlfriends, quite obviously. And we were just there as like a little group. So we thought, next time we're going to bring the lady partners to
this very camp thing
that we're doing.
I love a Prince Charles Cinema sing-along, done several of them. Frozen's always a really good time.
Frozen's good.
Frozen's great. Muppet's Christmas Carol is a blinder, but you have been to arguably probably one of the best ones. They can't do now. I'm guessing they haven't got the screening rights for it anymore. The Muppets.
Yep, the Muppets, Jason Segel movie.
Jason Segel.
Segel. Yeah, it's great.
Such a good soundtrack.
I owned that screening because am I a man?
Or am I a Muppet? Am I a Muppet?
So everyone was singing. I mean, me and Graham were the loudest in there.
Obviously.
Of, again, women and kids.
Yeah.
And like, one other guy. There was one guy who came by himself. He sat in front of us, and we create like this bond of just singing to the Muppets. And, you know, the bit, I'm a Muppety man!
Yep.
I did that. I was very drunk. I did it so loud when everyone else stops. I didn't know everyone else was going to just stop singing there.
Yep.
And yeah, that guy. I've also done a Bugsy Malone one there.
Oh, that'd be fun.
That was really fun.
Little Shop of Horrors would be really fun as well, because that's got a blinding little musical soundtrack.
We could have been anything that we wanted to be. With all the talent we had.
So I last time I went to a sing-along was Muppets Christmas Carol. I thought better. Muppets Christmas Carol at Christmas time. It's like a bit of a yearly tradition that we like to do. We went down there with some of our friends.
I couldn't come.
You couldn't
because
go.
Because I was on death's door.
I remember.
That's a bit dramatic.
You were going to come,
I had
though.
A sore throat. I had a very bad chest infection.
You did. But we went, and me and my friend George were sat next to each other, my dungeon master, in fact. We were far and away the loudest people there. A couple of years
ago... You've got to get into it.
A couple of years ago, I went, because my birthday is obviously very close to Christmas, and we went on my birthday. And the woman I was sat next to was just like, she goes, "Are you excited?" And I was like, "Oh, I'm so excited to see you." She goes, "I didn't sleep last night. I was so excited."
For Christmas Carol.
For Muppet's Christmas Carol on December 14th.
Wow, that's a come online if I've ever heard one.
And they always do the... they show you the VHS song that's not actually in the movie. Which is weird as well, because they show it, and it's only now where I'm watching it, and they show it up on the big screen, is When Love Is Gone. And that's the song that was in the original cut, but they cut it out, and then they put it into the VHS version of, I think it was actually only the UK VHS release, and that puts that song back into it.
Hmm.
And it's weird that that song is cut out, because it's actually the reprise song at the end. Because the last song is When Love Is Found, which only works if you have When Love Is Gone, when he loses it in the past.
That's weird, because, you know, in the Muppets 2011 movie or what it was, they cut out a really important song there as well. Or, like, just an extra verse of Tex Richman.
Yes.
Where he talks about, like, the whole sad bit where I was a young kid and all the kids were laughing at the Muppets and I couldn't laugh.
Yeah.
And you're like... Okay, so that's why everyone says maniacal laugh.
It's because he can't actually laugh.
And that's why he hates the Muppets. But that isn't in there. That's only on the soundtrack. So why cut out? It would have taken like 20 seconds to leave it in.
But you had to get in that Miss Piggy song with Amy Adams, Me Party, which is literally that song only exists because someone was like, Miss Piggy hasn't got a song. We need to give her a song.
Well, it's also like, what? We've got female characters.
We haven't done anything weird.
Just do this. So what have they been doing? Okay, we'll just film this bit. I like that song, though.
I like that
I'm
song as well.
I'm having a me party.
But it's not connected to anything.
Just for one.
Because Miss Piggy's singing. It's like, why are you singing it?
Because she's also been left alone by Kermit.
Has she? Not really. Oh, that's lovely stuff. I could just talk. Should we just start a Muppets podcast rather than talk about wrestling?
Well, what's great about acca-alongs or quote-alongs or sing-alongs in particular is that I love karaoke.
Yeah.
I love getting drunk and yelling songs at the top of my voice because I can't sing. I yell.
Mm-hmm.
And movies. And you can put both of these things together. It's dark. People can't see your face. It's like a YouTube comment section.
And I would also say as well, you heard the advert for it at the top of this podcast, Wrestling MediaCon is coming up in September, September 8th and 9th, and there's going to be a VIP party, which we're going to be at, and there will likely be some karaoke going on there. So people could come and do karaoke with Luke and Ollie and Laurie of WrestleTalk.
I keep forgetting he's part of it. He's over there. Still new. We haven't hazed him or anything. If anything, he hazed us on the way in. That's not how this works.
I'm just going to do this quick email before we get on from Jeff Ranieri. Hey, Luke, a group of my friends and I are doing an online D&D campaign and we're all pretty new to the game. My friend John stepped in and embraced the DM role and he is going great. He's doing a great job. He's written going, so I'm correcting him there. He is doing a great job. His birthday is coming up in a couple of months and I wanted to send him some sort of cool or funny Dungeon Master gift or accessory. Any suggestions? Also, I love the show and I'll send a Rusev Hay in about my airport encounter with Byron Saxton soon.
Wow.
So, DM gifts. Really, I should have had Laurie in for this because... So, we started our D&D campaign late last year and we're also part of the same Secret Santa group. And just by happenstance, we all basically drew each other. So, a lot of our presents that we got were all Dungeon Master themed. Like, Gary got our DM... just Dungeons & Dragons themed. He got him the board thing that you have to put in front of you as the DM that's got all the rules. Like, it's basically like a quick guide thing so you can kind of see what you need to do. And he has that set up in front of him. A wicked picture of a dragon on the front flying away from a castle. Got a t-shirt that's got like funny Dungeons & Dragons, sort of not so much quotes, but things that you would understand if you played D&D, that sort of gubbins.
Like a list. Things that only D&D players will get.
No, it's things like... You're standing in front of a giant bear. I go to attack, you roll a one, I fall over. You know, it's that sort of thing. it's, you know, it's just hilarious. A little teaser. Hilarious. So, yeah. That's what I would suggest. You can go onto eBay, type in Dungeon Dragons. There's loads of t-shirts. In fact, there's one that's like the Run DMC logo, but it says Run D&D, which is very good for a Dungeon Master. I couldn't wear it because I'm not one. So yeah, I think certainly things like that would be quite good. But shall we get into the show? Got quite a packed show, talking about New Japan stars going over to... Sorry, new WWE stars going to New Japan. And we've also got your crap gimmicks, including an absolutely corking crap gimmick submission. Your mailbag questions... And at the end of the show, we'll do some Rusev Hayes. By the way, I'll talk about it in the show, but we've had an email, or a tweet in, a couple of tweets. He sent me this tweet multiple times asking for us to drop Rusev Hayes because he doesn't think that people actually like them. So, if you like your Rusev Hayes, do let us know. Here's the show.
Should WWE stars go back to New Japan? This comes off of the Wrestling Observer newsletter from last week, who reported that, or rather pointed out that... AJ Styles, Shinsuke Nakamura, Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson all joined the company in early 2016. It was that huge controversial thing where they wrestled at Wrestle Kingdom 10, that great match between AJ Styles and Shinsuke Nakamura, and after the show, they handed in their notice, we're going to WWE. And New Japan's like, oh my god, you're at two top stars, pretty much. What are we going to do? Spoiler, they were okay. They had an Okada.
Yeah, they did. They had plans in place.
They had a but like plans that they had to come up with.
Yes, but luckily enough, they had people that were already there because that show was headlined
people
by
stepped up,
by Okada Tanahashi.
Oh yes.
And now I think the plan with that was just like, cool, so we're putting Okada over Tanahashi here because we're going to be pushing him as our next big guy. But at that point, like Okada wasn't like the guy.
No.
At that point,
he got sort of that Roman Reigns backlash. Sometimes people love Tanahashi. Why wouldn't you look at his hair?
Mm-hmm.
And but who's to say that maybe New Japan weren't planning an epic Okada Nakamura chaos imploding faction feud?
Well, I mean, I don't want to be the guy that just constantly plugs their Patreon, but you and I did a review of Wrestle Kingdom 10 for Wrestle Ramble Extra.
It's
and in that, we were reading excerpts from the Wrestling Observer at that time where Meltzer was saying, like, look, they've got these bunch of guys, but the majority of them aren't ready. And he was talking, he was even saying names there like Kenny Omega and Naito. I was like, hey, you know, soon they'll be big guys, but at the moment they're not.
Yeah, now they're going to have to carry the company.
Yeah.
And boy, howdy, did they.
They certainly did.
So, yeah, that was early 2016. And then the month after, Karl Anderson and Luke Gallows, who was Doc Gallows, was finally, you know, when... The old name finally disappears and the WWE name is the name your mind automatically goes to.
Yes.
Daniel Bryan's Daniel Bryan now in my head.
Yes.
But he was Bryan Danielson for about a year at the start.
Yeah.
So that they handed in their notes in like February or something. So January and February 2019, they were 3-year deals. Those four guys' contracts expire in... You know, like 5 months.
Was
it Gallows
and Anderson one afterwards? I thought it was at the same time. I thought four of them were at the same time.
No.
Wasn't the story as well that Gallows, Anderson, and AJ were also negotiating with Impact about going over, where they said, yeah, we think we might come over. And then they started making merchandise and started making plans. And then they went to WWE instead.
So, from what I've read, Gallows and Anderson might have just signed their WWE contracts a few weeks after.
Okay.
I mean, it's pretty much the same time.
Yes, it is.
But
yeah. The crux of this is January next year.
Yes.
All contracts expire, and there is the option for them either to re-up or go to pastures new.
Mm. And the really juicy bit from The Observer is that they said New Japan want Nakamura back. He was one of their biggest stars of, well, ever really.
Mm-hmm.
Like, great performer, wrestler. So, but Nakamura, I would have said, if this was before WrestleMania, I'd have been like, I think he might go. Maybe that's a good thing for him. But this heel turn's been phenomenal. But at the same time, he hasn't won the big one after 6 times of trying. He's got the United States title. He's going to be in a match with Jeff Hardy and Randy Orton at SummerSlam.
Jeff Hardy's fifth eye.
Yes. Yeah, thanks for pointing that out, folks. Mm. That's what the fifth eye... With the eyes and the painted eyes.
But as we were talking about with El Fakador, it still doesn't make any sense because in order to show the other eyes, he's got to close 2 eyes. So at any one time, he still only has 2 eyes.
But yes, and the US title is another eye.
Which it's not. It's a title, mate.
Yeah, so that kind of all falls apart a bit.
Nonsense.
Nakamura. I just feel like. So yeah, what do you think? Nakamura, AJ, Gallows, Anderson.
Well, I believe the story was as well that one of the reasons why Nakamura went to WWE at this point in his career is because, like, I'm getting older, I want to slow down. I can't keep up with this New Japan style, which is kick the crap out of each other. I want to go be King of Soft style with The Miz and just have a nice old time where I work a lot more dates, but I'm doing less. And that's a much nicer, it's easier on my body. He can spend more time surfing. He's, you know, just feels better about himself. So that was the story I'd always heard with Nakamura.
Well, you wouldn't get more time. You'd be working more if you were working for WWE, dates and travel-wise.
Nakamura, in an interview, says that he's got more time now to do his surfing and stuff, and he really enjoys his surfing. It's one, of, it's one of his hobbies. It's one of his passions.
Well, it's like, yeah, the strong style in Japan, you kind of have to work that level and then some all the time.
Yeah.
Whereas WWE, as Nakamura's main roster babyface run really did reveal, can phone it in a lot of the time.
Yeah.
Unless you're wrestling John Cena, explode a suplex onto the head.
He's got to learn to take that, brother.
But like this heel character that he's got right now, he still doesn't have to. That heel side of things is making up for the lack of really good, like, you know, strong style wrestling that we like.
Absolutely, yeah. And I think maybe Nakamura could have, he could go back and be, I mean, he'd be a massive star again. They'd push him straight to the moon once again, and he'd probably have a lovely old time over there. AJ, on the other hand, AJ's the sort of guy, he's on top of the card on SmackDown. He's not the guy, because you can't be when you're on SmackDown, even if you are the WWE champion.
Front cover of WWE 2K.
But is he 19? Is he the guy?
No, it's Roman Reigns.
Of course he's not. He's not even like, man, what do you mean in the top five?
Vince McMahon's eyes. Yeah. No, you've got Brock Lesnar, Braun Strowman, Roman Reigns.
Yep.
And then maybe AJ Styles.
Maybe then, yeah.
Yeah. But, you know,
one, there's Randy Orton.
Well, one day, no, I think they see AJ above him, at the moment at least. But who's to say AJ doesn't get drafted to Raw eventually?
Yeah, which
and
was
Vince
the...
is apparently a very big fan of AJ.
And that apparently was going to happen this year. He was going to get drafted across.
So, yeah, he was coming out in red t-shirt the next week. I'm like, yeah, so you thought you were going the other way, obviously.
And Supercard, whatever that game is, they released they released images of like AJ with the Raw background and stuff like that. But yeah, so I think AJ is most likely will stay with WWE. I think he would re-up and stay there.
He's said in interviews as well, like, that he, if his body can still do it, he's still going to do it. But at the same time, he's got kids.
Yep.
And he wants to see them. He's like missed too many dance recitals or basketball games or whatever it is that the kids do these days.
Well, exactly, yeah. Like, he can stay in WWE, make a lot of money working in WWE. And I think he said he was going to retire in like 3 to 4 years anyway.
Mm.
So just spend those next 3-4 years working on top, big air quotes podcast listeners, of the company in WWE. Make an absolute truckload of money and then be like, cool, and now I'm just going to retire.
Yeah, he's 42.
Exactly,
42
yeah.
right now.
Yeah, he could just go be, sign on to be a brand ambassador for the company instead and, you know, just do talk stuff.
A super reduced schedule.
Yeah, you know, just go out and do WrestleManias. Mm. You know, just take that sort of that Undertaker, John Cena schedule and just, you know, do your big four.
Yeah.
And just be one of those guys.
So AJ, no, he's not going to move. Nakamura, I think he'll stay, but I wouldn't be surprised if he went back. That would be like, just shake up this global wrestling scene. And if New Japan really are looking to expand into the US, to hurt WWE, Nakamura's a guy they've got history with. They made him, effectively.
Mm-hmm, absolutely.
And, you know, he's like, part of going to WWE, I think, is to go to WWE. Just do it once. I don't want to end my career without saying I never went there.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe Nakamura's done that. He's had his fill. Maybe he wants to come back home.
He's had his WrestleMania. He had his WrestleMania moments.
Yeah.
He can move on into the sun.
He won the Royal Rumble.
Exactly.
He was NXT champion.
Twice.
So maybe New Japan make a big money play for Nakamura. So that would be an interesting like chess piece in this battle in global wrestling politics. Gallows and Anderson, though.
I mean,
of all the all four,
yeah, these are the lads that you would probably say, like, I'd probably go back if I were you, because the WWE clearly have no interest in them as a tag team. I think, I would imagine, going by WWE previous track record, they were only ever really interested in Gallows, and they had zero interest in Karl Anderson, and because Gallows is a big man. He's tall. You can do a lot with a tall guy.
He's young
guy,
as well.
And he's young. It's probably sort
he doesn't look young.
Yeah.
But he's only like 29, 30, I think. His first run when he was Luke Gallows with as Festus.
Yes.
He was like 21 or something.
He's a young old boy.
He looked like 45.
But yeah, so I think that they are guys that, like, they're just doing absolutely nouts on the main
it's
roster.
A real shame.
And really,
real
when you look at it, they've done nout since debuting. They really haven't done anything. The old day segments is about the only thing I can think of that they've really done.
Raw Tag Team Champions.
Yeah, but like, yeah. Oh, what a memorable run that was. And those great feuds that they had as champion.
Those belts, those tag belts really do ebb and flow with how much attention WWE's placing on them. Like last year, the SmackDown tag belts felt really important with the Usos and the New Day.
Yeah.
Now the Raw belts felt important with the Bar and stuff, but now,
not so much these days. So yeah, so I'd imagine that Gallows and Anderson has always said that he's very happy in WWE, again, because they're making a lot of money. But are you going to get that itch to just be like, man, I wish I could just go back and really put on great wrestling matches again?
Yeah, especially because Carl Anderson is such a good wrestler.
Isn't he just?
Like, he's... But you never see it. Like, singles competition, he could go really... Well, there's the... Well, I can't remember who he faced in the G1, but, like, it was a near five-star match at, like, 5 years... 4 or 5 years ago now. So, maybe Carl Anderson's like, well, yeah, one more time. I love that. And they'd be really good back in New Japan. And it's painful to see them. They're not even in the tag tournament on the SmackDown brand.
Well, we keep forgetting they're part of SmackDown. I'm not sure which brand they're associated with. Mm. The other thing with Gallows and Anderson as well, if I was them and I was looking at the situation, I would be looking at the state of WWE at the moment and be like, well, this company doesn't care about tag teams. And unfortunately, I'm in a tag team. And that means I cannot go anywhere.
Yeah.
Because they're not going to push me as a singles. They're not going to push us as singles guys. They're only going to want to push us as a tag team. Now, they don't care about the division. Then why? I'm not doing anything. Mm. All they're doing is house show loops.
Yeah.
You know, and house
main
show
event.
House show loops are probably hilarious. I know they're not even a main event because that's a Raw only thing.
Mm.
So they're probably having a whale of a time on main events. But it's, you know, you're doing nowt else. When was the last time they were on TV?
Yeah, well...
they had a feud with the Bludgeon Brothers.
A title match at a pay-per-view.
I think, in fact...
No one remembers.
I'm pretty sure Anderson has a singles win over one of them. Might even be Harper.
Yeah, and the Bludgeon Brothers don't lose.
No,
much.
They do not. No. Like, that should be a really big thing.
Yeah.
But I can't even remember the details of it.
Maybe...
That's not an invite for you to tell me what the details are. I don't really care.
Maybe a good way around this would be Gallows to stay in WWE, get that big man push. He could be the Braun Strowman light of SmackDown.
I thought you were going to say he could be the Tensai.
He could really be the Baron Corbin of SmackDown. He's much, much better wrestler than Baron Corbin. But Anderson, I just said selfishly, I would love to see him back in New Japan as a single star, going for that United States belt.
Well, it's what we said about Daniel Bryan. I think Daniel Bryan is probably very, very happy that he's in WWE. He doesn't have to, you know, he can just go home and see Brie all the time. He's probably a very happy lad in the position that he's currently in. But selfishly, I would love to see him back, you know, having some of these matches in New Japan, going to Ring of Honor and doing some stuff there. Selfishly, I would love to see that. But I'm sure that Daniel Bryan is probably very happy in the position that he's in.
Well, I was... So,
or is he, depending on what you'd shoot comments you want to believe.
And the Miz's promo. So Meltzer on Thursday's Wrestling Observer Radio said, was talking about that promo between the Miz and Daniel Bryan, and the Miz says, why don't you just let your contract expire and go and wrestle in indie things? And
Meltzer, in front of dozens of people.
Yeah, Meltzer goes that, you know, someone's given him that material and okayed it. WWE backstage aren't happy that Daniel Bryan hasn't re-signed
him.
And you're like, it's getting close, mate.
Or,
it's August.
Or, and perhaps this is me playing the devil's advocate here, he has re-signed, or they're very close to these negotiations, and they're just putting that in there because they want to stir the internet pot. They want to get the idea. It's that Vince Russo thing. You want to get them talking.
I've just thought of something else. Maybe SummerSlam will be a match with Bryan's career on the line. Miz hasn't accepted Daniel Bryan's challenge yet. Maybe the next development is Bryan to be like, I want to kick your ass so bad, and I believe in it, that I will put my career on the line back.
Yeah.
And that's what you have at SummerSlam. You don't let out that he has re-signed and he wins. And that would be a really dramatic stipulation. And it really has like a sort of poetic justice to it, because Miz can say, I started your career in NXT and now I'm going to end it at SummerSlam.
I really hope that's
isn't that good?
And in fact, it's now at the point, if they don't go in that direction, I'm going to be really annoyed.
I was talking about fandom with someone last night.
Fandom?
Fandom. It's where like fan reactions, he was saying, isn't it a shame these days where fans say stuff on the internet and then they backlash at people, like say you've written a book, and then by the next book you can't write the book you want to write because all the fans are like, no, these two characters should get together, this should happen.
The Last Jedi.
And I was like, as he was saying it, I was like, that's my job.
Me, I like that as a term though. Fan, I've never heard that one
before. Apparently that's the term. I thought he said femdon, which is something very
very different.
So I was like, so the title of this video is, should WWE stars go back to New Japan? And I was like, well, could we talk about Daniel Bryan? Because has he been in New Japan? I don't, like, I feel like he has, but I've got to Google this to be certain.
Well, it's that thing with like Jericho. Like, if Jericho hadn't wrestled there this year, would you have been like, did Jericho wrestle there as a, I mean, and it turns out he did, like way, way, way back when.
In a tag team with Jado. Or was it? Might not have even been that. So I found a match from 2003 with the American Dragon, of course now Daniel Bryan, teaming, don't look, with Canadian Shadow.
Well, unfortunately, I've already seen
it. Ah. Who's Victor?
In WWE.
The Ascension's Victor.
He's the one who, obviously, Connor's the bigger lad. He's the one with the same sort of hairline that I've got. Where it's actually, no, because he's got...
Widow's Peak.
It's very much a Widow's Peak. Also, as Simon Miller pointed out, has got the worst dress sense ever. Because he tears his t-shirt all the way down, so it's literally just like the neckline and a line. It's like, well, that's not covering anything, is it? That's not doing anything for you.
Gonna get burnt. So yeah, Daniel Bryan was there. So Daniel Bryan would be another person. I've written Brock Lesnar here. He was a former IWGP heavyweight champion.
Lest
we all forget.
Absolutely.
Chris Jericho's already there. Finn Balor, Luke.
Absolutely. Balor boy. Go back as Devitt. Go under his...
But I don't know when... We don't know Balor's contract status, but... I mean, talking about a guy who's reached a level and I don't think will ever break out of it with this WWE management.
No, do you remember how we were saying when we were reviewing Raw and they were in the geek locker room with all of like, the main event guys hoping... All putting their gear on, hoping to get booked for main events. And Bobby Roode walks into it and you're like, oh, cool, so you're part of this locker room then. That's where you are on this card. It's funny, someone just tweeted me, actually, from Cage Side Seats, probably about a year ago or so, a Bobby Roode rumour that was like, hey, Bobby Roode is being earmarked to be one of the top five guys on
that.
Whichever brand he's a part of. Mm. And, oh, sorry, I didn't put my phone on airplane mode, so I apologise. In fact, I might do that now.
Well done, Luke.
You're welcome.
Always the professional.
Professional. Sorry, it was my sister-in-law. And what was I saying?
Bobby
Roode. So he's very much now, that's the position that he is in. Mm. And you kind of get that feeling with Balor as well. It's like, Balor, what is your position on the card? Well, you are a lower mid-card guy, I suppose. Sometimes you get to go slightly upper because you get to work with Rollins or Baron Corbin, who's taller than you, ergo he must be better. But there's no way in heckins you're back in that Universal Championship picture anymore, because I guess that injury just soured Vince on him and just be like, he's injury prone, can't be trusted with the belt, don't push him.
What's his character? Makeup? Okay. Oh, the makeup's not over. What?
Yeah.
Yeah. I don't think Finn would go back there. I don't know what
go
he feels.
To, go back to New Japan?
Yeah, he always looks so happy. Well, but is it a dead smile?
There's nothing behind that smile. Depends on, like, you know, how much Lego he wants to buy, really. Like, is he going to make more money working in WWE to buy loads of Lego? Or is he happy going over to New Japan, maybe not making quite as much money, but having to buy less Lego? Mm. Maybe that's the conundrum that he's got.
But I would like to see Finn Balor go back to New Japan.
Absolutely.
Imagine, like, working in that. Best. Well, was he a junior? Or
he was, and he worked his way
up to a heavyweight. So yeah, and the other guy I've got here who did wrestle in the Best of the Super Juniors tournament or the New Japan Cup just before he was signed to his NXT deal, Neville.
Mm-hmm. Well, you know, he's a guy that, and he will be like once that WWE contract expires, whenever that is, or if his lawyers can get him out of whatever deal that he's currently in, because at the moment the rumor is they're essentially just paying him to stay at home, so he can't go to New Japan, he can't do All In, he can't do the cruise, and Jericho's cruise, that is. I mean, he could probably, he might want to do other cruises.
International waters? Where does the legality stand when you're out there?
Well, it depends if it's a wrestling show or not. He could probably go onto a cruise and do some crooning, but he can't go and do a wrestling show on a cruise. I think that's where
he could just hang out on the cruise.
Well, he could. That's what I mean. He could go on there, he could entertain, call bingo and do all that. He'd probably have a whale of a time. But he's the sort of guy that once that contract is off, then he's going to be all over the place. He's going to be doing Rev Pro. He's going to be doing Progress. He's going to be doing New Japan. He's going to be doing Ring of Honor. He'll be all over the show once that contract is up, because I think with Neville as well, and this is kind of like where I'd like to think that his mindset is at the moment, the less he, or the more time he's not in WWE, the more his stock rises, because the more anticipation we'll have to see him get back into a wrestling ring, and that's when we'll be really excited to see him back.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
It's time for some of your crap gimmicks. Now, if you're new to this show, what is a crap gimmick? Crap gimmick is when you, the Swap Nation, send us your suggestions for crap gimmicks to be entered into CGW Crap Gimmick Wrestling.
CGW, CGW, CGW. I did the three.
I know.
Three repeats.
Like we talked about on Ramble Club, which you can be a part
off
of.
After two.
Sorry, well, I'm conscious for time. Which I thought I'd waste by explaining to you that I'm conscious for time. So if you'd imagine what a crap gimmick is, it's like 90s WWF. You are a wrestler and a blank. Let's see what we've got this week. Skyler has suggested the kleptomaniac. The kleptomaniac is a wrestler who struggles with his addiction of stealing things, whether it be a pen from the bank teller or the phone from your pocket, and uses wrestling as a therapeutic catharsis to work through his issues. Alongside him is his manager, a portly psychiatrist by the name of Dr. Morton. The kleptomaniac comes across as a harmless, slender, disheveled young adult. Think Spike Dudley, who enjoys interacting with the fans on the way to the ring as a means to swipe merch from them and wear it himself, only for Mr. Morton to promptly return it to his owners with an apology. Once in the ring, however, the kleptomaniac goes into action, often struggling valiantly against bigger, more powerful, or technical foes. When put to the ropes, figuratively or literally, the kleptomaniac will often resort to stealing the more effective moves of his opponent, trying to win with the signatures and finishes of those he faces. If made even more desperate, the kleptomaniac will even steal the ring belt bell in an attempt to prevent from being beaten by not allowing an official end to the match. That is the Kleptomaniac.
That's not bad, you know. I really like the manager dynamic with Dr. What's-his-name?
Dr. Morton.
Dr. Morton. Is that a pun?
Could well be.
Something.
I'm sure someone will tell us.
And I like... I'm surprised he didn't go for stealing victories.
Yeah.
That's how they would win. But it's weird how this keeps coming up in a lot of the crap gimmicks. And it's the crap gimmick using someone else's moveset.
Yeah.
Like, that's their whole gimmick. But here, I think it works quite well.
I think it works nicer here than it has done in the past. Because the often thing that we tend to fall into with crap gimmick submissions is that the crap gimmick they'll be really good, but as soon as they get in the ring, they're rubbish. And they're always beaten up and then steal something in order to get a victory. I did quite like it here. I particularly like stealing the ring bell. I also love the stealing merchandise off people, you know, slyly and like just like moving along. Like he hasn't like, you know, it's just absolutely normal to him. Mm-hmm. And then Mr. Morton has to take the hat off and give it back to the little child that he's stolen it from. I think that's quite cute, really. It's like a reverse Bret Hart.
Yeah, yeah. And it's kind of a comedy gimmick as well. I'm sure there's someone who does this. Well, they'll walk along and, you know, take something off and someone puts it back and then he gets it back again. It's very slapstick, Laurel and Hardy silent movie style stuff. Yeah. I mean, it's essentially making fun of a serious condition.
Mm-hmm.
So that's a plus in the crap gimmicks wrestling because, there's it's quite offensive. It's crap gimmicks. They've got nowhere else to apply their trade.
And speaking of which, if you want to submit your crap gimmicks, it's luke@wrestletalk.com. Got a backlog. I'm actually up now to 170 submissions.
It's a popular segment.
Popular segment, but that takes us up to June. So if you sent anything before June and it hasn't been featured, well, actually it's the end of June, so it's more into July now. So if it hasn't been featured, that means that it has either been used on here or it wasn't good enough to even make it into the cut.
Didn't make the cut. It was not crap enough. So when it's like, think of that, you did a good thing. It just wasn't crap enough.
Exactly. Michael Cruz's suggestion. This crap gimmick is called Mr. Monopoly and is based on a sort of combination of the popular board game and the Million Dollar Man gimmick.
I like this already.
He comes out dressed in a suit and wears a monocle on his eye. He is announced as being from the corner of Broadwalk and Park Place, which I think are the purple ones. So that would be Pall Mall for us.
Yeah, because I didn't know Monopoly was localised.
When you're a child, you just know the one Monopoly.
Yeah, we've got London over here.
Yeah, even if you're in the north, you played with the London version of Monopoly.
Yeah. What have they got up there?
How very dare you?
Do you know what the first Monopoly board was?
Oh, do you know what? I should know this because I actually listened to the Audible book about the creation of Monopoly, but I've forgotten what it is.
I believe it's Atlantic City.
Well, I do know that the original point of Monopoly was to show how cooperation and greed is a bad thing.
It's so much fun.
And now it's turned into, like, no, cooperation and greed is great.
Yeah, creating real estate property bubbles that are just going to explode.
It's meant to tell you, it's meant to warn you. It's like 1984. It's not a blueprint.
If people cheat at Monopoly, what the hell? Like, I hate people who cheat at games.
I just can't believe we have now gone two episodes and we brought up Monopoly in both episodes. Because we were talking about Monopoly in the podcast intro yesterday as well.
Were we?
Yeah, Marble Monopoly. I used to play when I was a university student.
Anyway, sorry, sorry. Mr. Monopoly thing.
So he is announced from being from the corner of Boardwalk and Park Place. During matches, he will pull out a bag that looks like it's going to be a bag of thumbtacks, but it's Monopoly houses.
Oh!
And his finisher would be a top rope leg drop called the Bankrupt, and at the end of the match, he would stick Monopoly money into people's mouths, a la Ted DiBiase.
Really like this.
That's Mr. Monopoly from Michael Cruz.
And he'll have like white hair, the big moustache.
Yep.
He'll look like an old, small, frail guy who can go in the ring. And I mean, he's going to wrestle like Baron Corbin, with the top hat.
Yeah.
Not that Baron Corbin wrestles in a top hat, but he does wear a waistcoat.
It might get him over if he did, though.
Yeah. But it will cover up his lovely, luscious, long, thick, flowing hair.
Baron Corbin?
Yeah.
The bald Baron Corbin.
I was making a joke.
I was going to say, I thought you'd forgotten for a second that he went bald.
And I think just to add to that, I was going to say they should take the boot of the opponent off So he has to walk on
the Monopoly houses. I love this idea of doing the big old scoop slam into the Monopoly houses, yeah, and selling it like it's thumbtacks.
That's great.
So great.
And I mean, the promos write themselves.
Pretty much, yeah.
For pay-per-views, he turns up in the race car.
He's got a dog.
He's got like
carrying an iron.
Oh, no, he's got the iron. Yeah, boom, that's a weapon. Oh, the iron thimble, was it?
Yeah, there was a thimble as well. I think that got retired from the game, unfortunately.
I mean, but I never really knew what it was.
Look at you. We're so old school with our Monopoly references. You can tell when we were born.
Are the pieces also universal, or are they localized too?
I do not know.
Like, in America, do they get guns? Bales of hay? I don't know.
Is that what America is to you?
Of all the countries, yeah, cowboys.
I was thinking like eagles, flags. No, you're all about guns and bales of hay, wheat.
Cowboy hats would have been better on on reflection.
Anyway, next up we've got Luke Croft Faulkner has suggested the Executioner.
That's already, that's a great name.
The
Lord Croft, Luke Croft Faulkner.
The Executioner. This muscly giant comes down to the ring dressed as a medieval executioner with a black hood and an oversized axe over his shoulder. The Executioner is here to restore order to the crap gimmick roster and execute all of those who stand in the path of him rectifying the injustice of the Executioner not being the whatever champion we have, so it's the CG dub champ. His entrance music is Gallows Pole by Led Zeppelin and is accompanied to the ring by his two companions. The first is a man dressed up as an old-style judge who is the Executioner's mouthpiece. Because the Executioner doesn't talk, the judge does all the talking for him by cutting promos, telling his opponents of why they are guilty. Could be them being an undeserving champion or just cheating in matches. With this, the judge sentences them to trial by combat against the Executioner. He doesn't actually list who the second person is, so... slightly missing there. The Executioner's fighting style is that of your typical giant. He delivers a lot of big power moves and stiff shots and wears his opponents down until they cannot stand up any longer. With this, when his opponent is on their knees, the Executioner starts to execute, pun intended, his signature move, the Verdict. This is where he pulls his thumb out, similar to that of the Roman Emperor, and defeating the reaction to the crowd. The judge outside either renders his opponent not guilty by putting the thumb up, or simply walking away and getting himself counted out, or he renders them guilty, to which he puts his thumb down and gives them a big old running boot whilst they are still kneeling on the ground. After this, even though he could pin them from that, he picks up his opponents and ends the match with a standing guillotine, to which most people pass or tap out from.
That's too good. That's not a crap gimmick. I was thinking about this as you were talking. I thought, you know what? I've never seen... I'm sure it's been done, though. I've never seen, like, a lucha mask with the Executioner, the old, like...
slit.
Yeah, the slit and the sort of fabric that goes beneath it and flops around.
Mm-hmm.
That's a cool look.
My other downside to this as well, I feel, is that an Executioner would have... like, this is like he's standing up for truth and justice. Executioners were hired guns.
Mm.
You know, it was the king that was the person who was being like, I'm sentenced you to death. The Executioner was just there to swing the axe. They weren't... they didn't decide whether or not they did something or anything like that. So this almost feels like it should be a heel. But this guy feels like he's a babyface.
Yeah, like a hired muscle for the heel authority figure.
Exactly. Like, this judge really should be a king. The king is out there as, like, his second, his manager. He's the real heel villain, and he's using big, muscly giant as his, like, right arm of the law.
But at the end of the day, this is like a decent gimmick. I quite like the character. So of all of them, I mean, it's Mr. Monopoly.
I mean, it's Mr. Monopoly, really, isn't it?
We're signing you, Monopoly.
And if you want to submit anything to the mailbag, all you have to do is become one of our legendary pledge hammers by pledging on Patreon of any dollar amount.
And if you are a $10 or above... did I say that right? Or above.
Or above.
There's an extra... there's a letter in there that I missed out.
No.
Or above.
Or above.
Or above. $10 or above. Then you would have got yesterday, hopefully, if Luke's finished
editing it,
Ramble Club, where we'll be revealing our top 5 wrestling matches of the month outside of WWE.
Our Fab 5 matches, if you will.
The G1 Climax, Slammiversary, NXT.
Oh, it's been a great old month. G1 yes. Special, it's been a good old month. In fact, and I don't want to give anything away, but you'll get to hear me be very, very salty about a very, very salty Jim Ross.
Yeah, so Luke finds a way to be negative on our top 5 matches
our
of the month
Fab
show.
5.
And also, probably the best chapter we've ever read.
Oh, so good.
We are now 50 pages in. It's quite neat.
That's good. And that's your point as well about it. Is it 42 pages?
42 pages. The page 42 is generally where a book gets all the characters sorted out and the exposition's down, and you're on with the story.
And the tease at the end of that chapter, as we get to page 50, is superb.
I mean, I almost want to read it just to get people to pay.
Absolutely not. So we've got a mailbag here. Hello, Luke and Ollie. This is from Buttered Toast. I was curious, if you were a spoon, what spoon would you be?
I'd be the biggest spoon. So I thought that this all started, the spoon thing on the podcast. People who don't listen to the podcast, they're going to be like, what are you talking about? I thought that dessert spoons were tablespoons, but tablespoons are actually a lot larger. And I like that's a hell of a spoon. So I'm a tablespoon. But that isn't a dessert. This is a dessert spoon. Look. A tablespoon is bigger than that.
Mm-hmm.
What would you be?
I think I would probably be a spork. Misunderstood. Useful, but just really misunderstood.
What's misunderstood about it?
Well, people hate sporks. They just think they're stupid. I think that was probably where I'd go.
Okay, yeah.
Marcel Drura has emailed in to say, "Hey, Luke, Ollie, and Laurie. I look back to my childhood..."
He's in there, he's waving to us. Edit! Keep editing!
"When I look back to my childhood days of being a wrestling fan, I always think about who were my top stars back then. For me, it was the mid-90s, it was Shawn Michaels. Yeah, I'm one of the few Big Daddy Cool Diesel fans. But today, I'm asking myself who the top stars are and who my top feud would be. You know, those rivalries that you think at that moment are destined to go on forever. A blood feud of the caliber of Sami Zayn and Kevin Owens. Back in the day, the most eternal feud in my eyes was Owen and Bret Hart, a sibling rivalry destined to go on forever. My question for you two is, what is the feud for you when you grew up?" I think I know what my answer would be here, because it's the feud that I'd like instantly. I was hooked, and this is what, you know, because I was a wrestling fan since late 1999, getting into the early 2000s. So this was the one that sucked me in and got me there all the time. It's Triple H, Cactus Jack.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my god, that is a feud that I think about and it gives me goosebumps. That promo package before Royal Rumble 2000. It only went 2 months really. And you lead that into No Way Out 2000. Oh, man, that Hell in a Cell match is so good. But apart from that, I suppose it feels like they could fight forever would be Triple H and The Rock.
Yeah. And Triple H and... Sorry, Stone Cold and The Rock.
Stone Cold and The Rock's another
one. This is a tough one. My mind... I think I'm going to say what my mind immediately served up. Chris Benoit and Chris Jericho.
Good shout.
I was so into that, three match series, because I was super into the Intercontinental title as a kid.
Mm-hmm. The workhorse belt.
Yeah, and I loved, obviously, you know, standard disclaimer that he went on to do horrible things, but tell that to 2001 or 2000 Ollie. I thought that was a great feud, and I was just so into both their characters. Yeah, that would be, I don't know why that one springs to mind first.
Absolutely. The other one I'd go to as well was Hardy's, Dudley's, Edge and Christian. That sort of three-way tag team feud that went on for a long old time, and I loved every time, like the variations they got from that.
And talking about eternal feuds, like feuds that never end. Like if they went into, and they have done in TNA back when it was called TNA, that when they start up that fight again, you're like, yeah, okay, yeah, I believe you are still all warring.
Yeah.
And it was, you could just go away and then come back. It didn't. That you still had all that fire and tension.
Absolutely. Marcel Drawer as well adds here that he is sent in the crap gimmick roster submission from February, so maybe resubmit it and give it another shot. He also, Marcel Drawer is the guy who thinks we should drop Rusev Hayes from the
Rusev Hayes!
He believes, his argument is, that people only send them in, we get a lot of them, but they only send them in because they're easy submissions, but no one actually enjoys listening to them.
Well, let us know your thoughts, exactly. Swaff Nation and Pod Swafters.
Connor Barth emails in, "Hello, Luke, Ollie and Laurie. Got to show Fake It Awesome love. My name is Connor. I'm a $10 pledgehammer and I have a question. This is in regards to the Raw from the 31st of July. Reigns got a really good reaction at the end of the show and the fans genuinely wanted him to come out and beat up Brock Lesnar. Do you think WWE have finally conquered this uphill battle and fans and Reigns and WWE can sustain this? And how do you suggest they do this? Thank you for all the consistent content and great information." That's from Connor Barth, as he calls himself, Connor Barth in the blood of his enemies.
That's his pledgehammer name,
which he doesn't understand apparently.
Oh, it's because Barth Maybe he says bath.
Maybe.
So bath is how I would say a bath of water.
Yep.
You know, you have a shower and a bath. A bathroom. A bathroom.
Yeah, bathroom.
Bathroom. Garage. So I... No. No, I don't think that Roman Reigns is over the way WWE want him to. I think a large part of those cheers came because it's Miami. That's his home kind of area.
It's his home state. As we sort of incorrectly said, we said, I said I didn't know if Pensacola was close to it. Apparently, it's as close as Cornwall is to Edinburgh.
Oh, so nowhere near.
Nowhere near, apparently. Yeah. So, yeah, it's probably not as close as we may have think, but it's still his home state. So maybe that had something to do with it. But, you know, he was also cheered the week previous. I always find that with Roman, though, and I think I said this on Twitter in the week, there's always an excuse for why he gets cheered. Like, no one can just admit that there is a portion of the fans that like Roman Reigns. And there is a portion of the fans that like Roman Reigns. It's just that the people who don't like Roman Reigns are a probably larger portion, and they're louder.
It's just a shame that this is WWE's top star, not just on Raw but for the whole company. That's the guy they want to lead into the future. And he's getting tepid reactions. Like, this is like, oh, wow, the crowd were on Roman's side. Like, well, they were, but, like, was it deafening cheers of Rocky, Rocky? Was it everyone wanting Stone Cold to come out? No. It was, like, just this lukewarm, we want Roman.
Yeah, it wasn't like when he won the title during that whole Vince McMahon and League of Dorks thing that they did, like in Philly. And that was a Philly crowd that they were super into Roman then.
Good booking that was.
Good
for that
booking,
match.
But like that, they never managed to sustain that at all. To Lita Ree Stanley, thank you very much for becoming a Pledgehammer recently, but I'm not overly sure on your question. So if you could try and reword it, because it's about the women's division. I think what you're asking is, if a woman can transcend the women's division into the men's division, and who would you like to see become WWE champion? I think that's the question. But
WWE is serious about the women's division, when/who do you think their top champion will be?
A woman. So I think it's like, when do you think, when will a woman become WWE champion? The answer is never. My lady partner wanted Asuka to storm and win Money in the Bank and beat Brock in less than 2 minutes.
What?
But I've got to ask this question from the Dashing Dan before we move on. I think I might be the only wrestling fan who thinks Seth Rollins is overrated. In my opinion, he puts on the same match every time with the same forced spots that eventually lead to a finish no matter who he is fighting. I would really like your opinions on how Rollins can justifiably be called Red Hot Rollins. Why should I not see him as just another overhyped spot monkey? And is there anyone on the main roster whose in-ring work you prefer? Keep up the consistent work, and thanks for the great rambling, the Dashing Dan.
Oh.
I wanted to get to that one because I knew you would be...
Okay, well, you know, like all these things...
To each their own.
You're not completely wrong. I don't like Seth Rollins' dives. Like, the dive to the... Sometimes it works when dive to the outside, when six-man tags or tag matches.
Or when Drew catches him.
Yeah, but mostly I think, you know, for me, Jay Lethal's the man of dives. Those ones where he just does one after the other.
Ember Moon.
Ember Moon's dive's fantastic, but Seth's... I'm never like, wow, a dive. I'm just like, a dive.
That is a
dive.
Yep.
But I would argue that Seth Rollins... I see what you mean about him doing the same match all the time. And there is definitely a template. But Ric Flair had a template.
Bret Hart had a template.
You know, that's the John Cena, The Rock. You've got these same
Austin
moves that you
template.
Run through. Yeah, it's kind of like a greatest hits tour. When you become that level of star, people want to see those moments in the match. But what really is smart about Rollins is that he can riff on them ever so slightly. Like, sometimes someone pins him off the superplex into the Falcon Arrow spot. Sometimes he doesn't hit the curb stomp just yet. And I think the way he adds in all these wrinkles and subverts what you think's going to happen is, you know, like a kick out when it previously you would think there's a pin there. I think he's remarkable. And what he really has carried the wrestling portion of Raw. And granted, he has been given that opportunity. There's several other people, you know, like Finn Balor could be the guy to carry the wrestling. Dolph Ziggler could be, Drew McIntyre could be. But Seth Rollins has had that spot since February, really, in that gauntlet match. And he's done a great job with it. And he is, for me, the most over guy on Raw.
apart from Braun.
During the matches.
Yeah, I suppose because people just want to pop for Braun big spots.
Yeah, like I don't. And overall, I don't think a Braun title win, like a WWE Championship win, would be that big. But I feel like Rollins winning it, the crowd would get so into him and so behind him, it would be a better release.
Well, no, I completely agree. Because I think with Braun, people would pop that Braun won. Mm. And then, because when Braun wrestles, people, they pop when Braun does his Braun spots. When Seth wrestles, people are into the whole match and they just want to see Seth win. And my argument, Dash Dead, of course, you're not wrong in your opinion. If you want to think he's an, if you think that he is a overhyped spot monkey, you're absolutely, you know, just in the same way that Jim Cornette is allowed to think that of the Young Bucks. You know, it's different strokes for different folks. There are people who like Roman Reigns. There are people that don't like him. For me, though, what I like about Seth is that he is one of those wrestlers that he's not all just about the notes. He is about the beats between the notes as well. He's, you know, like a great musician, he doesn't just do, here is the notes that we're going to play. He focuses on what you do in between those to really to make a song better than just a song. And that's what I really like about Rollins. And I think he's a really exceptional worker.
Mm. In terms of whose work on the main roster do I enjoy more? Currently no one on Raw, but on SmackDown, I would say, like, I really like watching the Usos tag.
Yeah. AJ, Joe.
AJ, I would put Rollins above AJ at the moment. I know, like, if they were allowed to do the same sorts of matches, AJ would probably win out. But Joe often does, like, Joe doesn't always have those classics. I love Joe's presence, but wrestling-wise, like, he can have bad matches. Like, Samoa Joe and Seth Rollins' feud is quite a good example of that. Just didn't click.
Yeah. But I think that Joe, like AJ, is someone on SmackDown, and I feel it's actually a lot for SmackDown guys at the moment. They don't give him the chance to go out there and have these, because Raw's got the got the extra hour to play with. They can go out and have 20-minute matches. SmackDown doesn't have that luxury because they've got time constraints.
You've got eight promo segments.
You've got to have 5-minute matches with an ad break in them. I think there's a couple of people maybe that I would say, but Daniel Bryan, absolutely. So we've got a Rusev Hey coming in.
Rusev Hey
from Livia. Dear Luke and Ollie, I would like to tell you both somewhat wrestling encounters. I've got two of them. So this was the Raw
that
after...
That guy's going to be stewing. Two! Gonna sit through two now!
So this was the Raw after SummerSlam 2016. Me and my family were leaving the show and we just happened to have parked on a street behind the parking lot of the venue. So when we were walking, me and my cousin saw the New Day on the bus. Not only that, but
on
there
the
were...
bus?
Not only...
Oh, not like a London bus,
no,
but like a tour bus.
The tour bus, sure, yeah. Sure. Not only that, but there was Kevin Owens walking towards some fans. Here comes the cringe alert. So I decided to yell, "Hi, Kevin!" like SpongeBob from that one episode. I felt so embarrassed because he didn't even answer me. Number two, this one probably doesn't count, but it happened in late February. I was at an airport with my mum to get someone. As we were leaving, I saw a guy who looked like Mick Foley. So me and my brother freaked out. Sadly, we were too far from my mum to let me and my brother meet him. I didn't get a photo. I also like to say, I love the podcast and YouTube channel. Sorry,
right,
this
that
is
one
too long.
That one doesn't count.
Yeah, just seeing someone.
Okay, okay. So, Rusev Hey, obviously let us know, because if people are... that could be a thing. Like, people like don't like hearing them as much as we like reading them, and people like sending them. So let us know on that. But if Rusev Hey wins out, I propose that we add a new Rusev Hey on called Rusev Maybe.
Where, sort of half meat.
Where you think you might have seen a wrestler.
No, it'd just be those people just walking into Stefan Zucic, that guy that emails in, people thinking he's Zack Ryder.
Yeah. So it's like, times you've been mistaken for wrestling personalities. Just things that are one step more boring than Rusev Hayes.
A correction on yesterday's episode as well. You know, I said that someone suggested calling it the Spoon Warriors for whenever you do Spoon Chat or Spooning with Ollie Davis. I misremembered what it was. In fact, I'd gone to their original name because Sasha Waltenholm got in touch to say, like, how the hell did Spoon Warriors get in over my suggestion of Legion of Spoons?
Oh, that's much better.
That makes sense. But I went to their original name of the Road Warriors rather than the Legion of Doom. And that's where my confusion came in. I misremembered it.
Well, now you've said it. It's time for Legion of Spoons.
Lovely
with
stuff.
Ollie Davis. Today's spoon, folks, is a rat tail spoon. Rat tail, all one word. Developed in the later 17th century, which is the 1600s. Always confuses me.
Mm-hmm.
With a thin pointed tongue on the bottom of the bowl to reinforce the joint of bowl and handle.
Mm.
Yeah, you can't click that one. It hasn't got its own entry. It hasn't got its own Wikipedia page.
Clearly not that interesting then. Matt Dagnall has sent in a Rusev Hay. Hi, Luke, not Ollie. Just wanted to chip in with a short Rusev Hay from this week. This was 6 days ago, so 2 weeks ago by this point. I was at Progress Chapter 74 for Travis Banks versus Volta for the title.
What a match that sounds
and
like.
As Walter won the title, there was a massive pop. And in the middle of this, someone was standing on a chair and fell into my lap. This seemed odd to me, as no one had been in that seat that the person had fallen from, and they got up and it emerged it was Trent Seven celebrating Walter's win. He apologized to me in his lovely northern accents, more Midlands, wished me the best and walked away after leaving me in shock. That's all just a bizarre moment. He was wearing normal clothes and wasn't wrestling that night, so I literally didn't notice him until he fell on me. Keep up the good work for the show. It's consistently consistent. Never ceases
Thank
to
you.
Consistently amaze me. P.S. Walter is amazing. I'm so jealous you got to see Walter at the New Japan shows that I couldn't go to.
Yeah, him versus... That was one of the best matches of that show.
Of course
him
it was. Versus, he is amazing.
Nagata.
Yeah, Yuji Nagata.
Unfortunately, Nagata started to chicken out and turn away from the chops. We're skirting past the fact that Trent Seven isn't the lightest fellow.
No, he is not.
For him to land on your lap.
Yeah. Oh.
I hope you're okay, mate.
Absolutely, I hope you're okay.
He tweaked his moustache before he went.
Sorry there, mate.
Sorry there.
I appear to have fallen on your lap there, man. Sorry. Got to go get the NXT Tag Team Championships while I'm at it.
Come along there, Tyler.
Okay, be with you in a second.
We've got an Agony Arts request here from... Oh, no, I nearly said his name there. I'm not going to say his name because it's anonymous.
We agree it's anonymous. Let's keep Steve's name out of it.
I'm going to have to skip past this a little bit because he actually talks about... They talk about an email that they've sent in previously.
Terrible at this anonymous thing.
I've been finding a lot of the Agony Art stuff on the podcast very interesting and also very relatable. I thought I'd share one of my own stories to show that sometimes just being friends with someone you have feelings for is not always a bad thing. So he's actually not looking for any advice from us. I finished secondary school 2 years ago. Congratulations. And during the latter part of that year, I became friends with a girl in my class, Nicole. During the summer of 2016, we spent a lot of time hanging around with our group of mutual friends, and we'd spend most of those times talking amongst ourselves. I was absolutely head over heels for this girl, but I always knew she didn't feel the same way back. Didn't bother me all the time, but there were moments where I'd think, God, I love this girl, but I know there isn't a chance I'll ever be with her. During our grads, or prom as it's known in the States, it's not even called grads here, dinner and dance as it was called for us.
We called it a prom.
Lame. Me and... Now, this is weird here because he then says, during our grads, me and Trisha spent a lot of that night together, and after a substantial amount of alcohol was consumed, she was telling me how glad she was that we became friends and we decided to hit the dance floor. And while we were giving it socks, she hugged me in the middle of a song and I almost made a move on her. And this is where it's confusing because previously he called her Nicole.
Yeah.
Now she's Trisha.
That's not an autocorrect thing.
Mm. However, I knew that if I didn't, it could ruin one of the best nights I'd ever have and also a friendship, which was still quite new at this point. Back to it, me and Nicole were in the same college. That could have been just a Freudian slip, I suppose.
Mm.
Maybe he's now dating a woman named Trisha and it was just a Freudian slip. Me and Nicole were in the same college but we traveled together to our class timetables very similar. One day we were on the same train and we decided to organise a big reunion for our school friends in the pub. Towards the end of the night, we'd once again consumed a decent amount of alcohol. We're out in the smoking area and I offered her a cigarette. I've stopped smoking since though, don't worry. Good
well
lad.
Done.
To be honest, I can't remember what we were talking about, but then one thing led to another and we ended up kissing. sing. I was on cloud nine. I just kissed the girl that I had a massive crush on. However, when I woke up the following morning, I was fearful that the moment we shared might have made things awkward between us, and I was worried that our friendship was over. I rang her to ask how she felt, and she replied with, it would take a lot more than that for us to stop being friends, which is probably the nicest way I've ever been friend-zoned. I opened up my feelings about her, and we went for lunch during our midterm break from college. She thanked me for being so honest and not being a creep about it. Surprisingly, this never made things awkward between us, and our friendship grew even stronger. Our attitude was that if I had the courage to tell her that I had feelings for her, that neither of us should be able to afraid to tell each other anything. Nicole remains one of my best friends to this day, and I've been seeing a different girl the last 3 months, and I've never been happier. I wonder if that's Trisha. Sorry for the long email, but I just wanted to show that not every crush ends in heartache, and if someone has similar feelings for a boy or girl like I had for Nicole, I hope this story might help. From Anonymous.
I warn thee in the future, if you ever come to marry this Trisha and you have already
take thee Rachel,
yeah, you have already swapped names by accident.
Yeah.
Just take Ross Geller's example.
As we all should.
Yeah, just he's a beacon of stuff you shouldn't do in relationships.
Absolutely. I mean, because I actually had a similar situation, but it went the opposite direction. Me and this girl were very, very close, very good friends at school. We nearly ended up living together after I got out, because we both went to the same university. I had massive feelings for her. I was smitten with this girl. And we nearly moved in with each other after university, because we were just still very good friends. And on a drunken night out of my 22nd birthday, I walked her home, and we ended up making out quite a lot. And that was, for me, in my moronic state, was just like, this is it now. Finally, we have reached this point. It was not. Mm. She was just like, you know, it was something that was probably going to happen because of our friendship, but it can't go any further than that. And I was like, ah.
So all these examples, the people of, and this is like my thing, you don't end up with the girl very rarely. So you didn't end up with your one.
I did not. I married someone.
Anonymous
else.
Didn't end up with theirs.
No.
I just, I'm not friends with any girls. It's how I stay away from it.
Right, we're going to close off this episode with Marcel Drawer's favourite segment, Poetry Corner. Let's just step into poetry. Oh, we didn't even talk about your book thing.
We got sidetracked.
I haven't even talked about my Spielberg marathon. We're going to talk about it, but do it quickly because we're running out of time.
I've got a writing group off the back of my writing classes where the super geeks of the class all still get together. We've done a few Wednesdays now, and I had to pitch my full outline, and me being me, my full outline. Well, everyone else's full outline is, you know, this is what happens in chapter one. A couple of seconds, chapter two is like this, and, you know, takes about 10 minutes to go through an outline. My one was 3,000 words. And, you know, with detailed beat sheets for each scene. I didn't send those across. And when I emailed it around to everyone, and one of the guys was like, oh, I've only got the outline for chapter one. I was like, yeah, you're going to want to scroll down a bit more. Oh, there's 9 chapters. Yeah. So, yeah, it's gone well. Everyone dug it. And there was still no, like, constructive criticism, which I guess is a good thing, because we're all at the space where we'll happily, like, if something's not good, we won't say that sucks, but we'll go like, oh, have you thought about this? And no one even did that. So either I'm beyond saving, or it's a good thing. And
or no one understands it, and they can't criticize it.
That's also a big part of it. It's pretty dense.
It's like watching Interstellar for the first time. You're like, oh, is it good? I'm not sure.
Someone was like, oh, what? And so it's like, so they're doing this thing to this person. I was like, okay, I didn't go into that bit, so that's this. And so I've written 3,000 words of outline, and I've written 3,000 words of chapter one already. 50,000 words is a 200-page book. I thought it was more words.
Well, my,
so I feel like I'm halfway there.
My book is, I can't remember, it's just down there, but that was 175,000 words, I think, in total by the end of it.
175, and you've got 300, but you've got small text and big pages.
Yeah. There's a lot of words in that.
But yeah, if anyone, I mean, I don't know what the appetite is. I was thinking about, like, God, when
You open this up, loads of people, because I want to read it. I want to at least hear parts of it.
Yeah, well, I'm not going to do it for free, mate.
No, Patreon.
I was going to say, I don't know what the best thing is, like Kickstarter,
Patreon,
or pre-order in advance.
Set it through WrestleTalk.BigCartel.
Yeah, well, you don't have to... Your money isn't taken if I never finish it. But it's just a nice way to see interest, if there is. Like, my pre-existing audience, how much I can exploit them.
And just quickly before we do a Poetry Corner, this weekend I am doing a Steven Spielberg retrospective with my friends. We all voted on our top 8 Spielberg movies. The points were collated up and we're going to be watching 8 Spielberg movies back to back. Would you like to hear what's on the list? I mean, you more or less know.
Hit me up.
So we have got Schindler's List, Saving Private Ryan.
In this order?
I think this is your... In fact, I can tell you.
I don't want to start with Schindler's List at like 11 a.m. on a Saturday.
It's about 10 a.m. Where is... Hang on, I've got the email here. Spielberg Marathon, the winners, because he sent it as a nice little spreadsheet for us, including points and stuff. We've done this a lot. We do like the Friday... we've done Friday the 13th, Nightmare on Elm Street, Planet of the Apes. We've done loads and loads of these. Hellraiser, that was a bloody long one. All of these marathons together. And... oh, yeah, because I talked about this on the Patreon thing as opposed to on the podcast. Godzilla was the longest one. It took us 25 hours to do the first 15 movies back to back. But we also like put together PDFs of like fact sheets. So it'll have like a poster and it'll have the details about the film and stuff like that. Very nerdy about it. So in order, we're actually starting with Saving Private Ryan.
Good opener. What an opening scene.
I know,
after,
right?
You know, not the stuff in the graveyard.
And that's what you want when you're having a bagel. You know, a bagel in the morning, a bit of toast.
There's a bit. That I always, I mean, you shouldn't laugh at it, but it's, there's a guy just holding his leg, looking at his leg.
Yeah.
For some weird reason, that makes me laugh.
Oh, it's sickening.
I mean, I've seen it too many times to be like, it's shocked not as impactful anymore.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm just like, oh, look at that guy.
So starting with Saving Private Ryan, then we're moving on to Schindler's List. Because initially we were going to do this in chronological order, but we realized we'd have ended with Schindler's List and Saving Private Ryan, and that would have been a drag to end your like you know 8 movie marathon on. Then we move on to Duel, and then we move on to Close Encounters of the Third Kind, then on to E.T., then on to Raiders of the Lost Ark, Jurassic Park, and we're ending with Jaws.
No Man in Black.
That's not Spielberg directed movie. You know that's a producing one. Right, finally, let's do this Poetry Corner from Will Haight. Not Will Haight, as we've been calling him for incorrectly for so long. There once was a very big dog. Every match of his was a slog. He had the wettest of hair. He main evented, no one would care. We liked his match oh so much more. We liked his friend oh so much more. His raw matches were always core. Every match that Rollins gave us made hard the great Ollie Davis. That's from Will from the New York area.
I like that very much, Will.
Thank you very much. But that is all we have got time for today. We hope you enjoyed the show. We'll be back on Tuesday with the Raw review. What's going to happen next with Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and the Universal whatever? We'll find out when Raw rolls into town. Take care. I love you. Goodbye. Do you want to meet myself and Ollie Davis of Wrestle Ramble fame? Well, you can do just that by joining us at Wrestling Media Con on September 8th and 9th from the Bowlers Exhibition Centre in Manchester, England. Ollie and I will be doing a live episode of Wrestle Ramble as well as signings and photos, but that's not all. Wrestling Media Con will have shows from Cultaholic, Inside the Ropes, Wrestling with Regret, Don Callis, Botchamania, Art of Wrestling, Sean Waltman, and more. There will also be the first ever Wrestling Media Hall of Fame and wrestling shows from Impact Wrestling, where they will be taking on the best the UK has to offer, and Revolution Pro Wrestling featuring the legendary Jushin Thunder Liger defending his British J Cup crown. Tickets are on sale now, so head over to WrestlingMediaCon.com. That's WrestlingMediaCon.com.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.